Move on to item number five, discussion and possible action on residential ground lease form for Possum Glen.
I'm just going to go here for a second. What I'd like to do is tell you that I've got Pollard here today. Since the time we met with you last, Pollard went through the initial proposal draft for a lease form. Since that time, we've really sat down and scrubbed it and made some changes to it, tried to make it a bit more user-friendly for the lessees. And with that said, what I'd like to do is let Pollard come up and run through it. The plan is, if we can, put the lease on the screen. Pollard will discuss the different tenants in the lease and also talk about the changes between the old BRA lease form and the new lease form, which should give you a pretty good idea of where we are. In addition, I wanted to advise you that in coordination with Pollard, we had contacted Casey Dobson with Scott Douglas and McConico and asked him to refer us to a firm in Austin that was really stout in real estate, basically asked him who he thought was a really good real property lawyer to assist us and get an alternative view and kind of look at the lease and give us some feedback. We did that. He gave us the name of a gentleman called Steve Drenner, who's in a firm in Austin. We got with Mr. Drenner, and he made some comments. He coordinated with Paul Rogers, and together I think we've got a good lease form that should work for us and is a little bit closer, I think, to what we need versus the old draft that we had. So with that said, let me be quiet and get Pollard up here and let him walk through this with us. We'll be prepared to answer questions if you have anything you have on the lease form.
Morning. I have to say, when Laura Lee called me, said, you know, we think it'd be best to hire another lawyer to look over your work. I started getting a little nervous. But fortunately, I think we got an A, because Mr. Drenner looked at the lease, had some good ideas, but basically we think the fundamentals are there. When you look at the existing cottage site lease and you look at the policies of this board in implementing those leases and enforcing the lease, then the proposed new lease does not have any significant change other than you've got a rent schedule that is basically ratcheting up the rent over a period of time to 6%. What we've done in this lease is to try and clarify issues for the benefit of both the board and the PK residents. Less uncertainty about what the rights and obligations are. I've said in the past, this has been a work in process. And the reason for that is we've tried to weigh what the board's goals are in dealing with a lease program that has evolved from what was fairly rural to what is now a very active area for development. Certainly the investments that residents are making out there have increased significantly. And so the board is absolutely correct in, let's make sure that our lease is consistent and compatible with the usage at PK today. In addition, the board, the staff has taken comments from PK residents and addressed those issues. And so I think what we have today is a fair lease that takes into consideration the board's goals and the interests of the current residents here. So if we can, let's walk through some of the provisions. Get on the screen. I'm going to step over here. Can you hear me?
That's all
right. Can you all hear me? Does this work?
Yes.
Okay. First page, I'm just going to point out highlights. If you all have questions, just stop me and ask a question. The first thing we tried to do on page one was to define what the real estate is that is under this lease. And as you all know, you've got two types. You've got the real estate that's owned by the Brazos River Authority, and you have the real estate that is subject to the jurisdiction of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And that's basically a strip of land along the shoreline. And it's important because FERC has different regulations on the usage of the property than the Brazos River Authority has. And we wanted to make sure that residents understood there is a difference. FERC property is public property. The public has certain rights to FERC-controlled property. So we tried to address it here. You'll notice that we've got a box there because in May 15, 1980, FERC looked at the leasing program as was today, grandfathered certain uses by the residents, and kind of changed the rules a little bit about future uses. And so that's why that's a pivotal date, and we want to make sure that that this has been identified. You'll see that, for example, post May 15, 1980, there is a 50-foot strip owned by the FERC. Pre-1980, it's 25 feet. So this is just clarifying what is out there. Let's scroll down. Okay, the term. The term as adopted by the board is 50 years. There's been some discussion, why 50 years? Why not 99 years? People are putting valuable improvements. These are residences. They've thought about passing that on to their children. Well, first, let's talk about what exists today under the county side lease and your policies. 30-year term, 2 10-year extensions. And that's it. What we try to do is establish certainty. That is, 10-year term.
Oh, wait a minute. Under the existing lease that we currently have?
20-year?
It's 20-year with 110.
Is it just one?
It's 110.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Isn't that correct? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. So it's a 30-year term, and we move to a 50-year term. And that is giving consideration to the fact that people are making valuable improvements to these leases out there, lease sites. And there is a sense of, you know, wanting to get your investment back. This is a home. Now, we've got one problem, and why not a 99-year lease? And the problem is, you're a river authority. You're subject to state law. You have, this real estate is, you have certain obligations in your stewardship of this real estate. And one of them is, you can't sell it unless you determine it's surplus property. And a 99-year lease could be very well construed as a sale because, in essence, you have given up any control for such a long time that the courts would consider it a sale. So what we did was opt for 50 years because there is some case law that has suggested that 50 years is not so long as to cause the, in this case, the school district, to basically give up control and violate their obligations with respect to public property. So that's what we've come up with. Now, one thing you could consider is as long as the board makes a determination that the leasing program is fits the mission and the public purpose of the Brazos River Authority, you can renew these leases. But that determination needs to be made. 50 years from now, the public purpose for the ownership of property around PK could change. And that's why there are legal restrictions on giving up control for a length of time like 99 years. But if you, as leases come up for renewal, if the board makes a determination, the program still fits the public purpose, you could renew these leases. So that's an option to keep in mind.
Well, Paul, can I interject? that's probably the biggest fear that I've heard from the people of Fossil Kingdom is, gee, at the end of 50 years, you're going to kick me out, you're going to lease my house. And leasing land is very different than leasing improved property, and I certainly don't want to be in that business in this capacity. But how can we, and Laura Lee, maybe if you can chime in, how can we word that in the lease where it gives those people some additional comfort? I understand we can't put in there that there'll be a renewal or a first right of refusal, but we can put a clause in the lease that says, you know, at that time, if the board...
Exactly. I think this has just been kind of us noodling on how we can give more comfort to the residents that renewals are available without legally committing that and, in essence, violating the statutory restrictions. And I think we could put something in there that basically states that the board can consider and will consider renewals of leases if it makes a determination that the leasing program continues to comply with its public purpose in the stewardship of the Fossil Kingdom property. It's not an obligation. You have to make that finding. If you make the finding that, in fact, the rules have changed, the usage is out there, changed 50 years from now, 100 years from now, then you have the option of saying, no, we're going to close this program down as these leases come up for renewal. But the point is, right now, you know, it's unstated, and you have no legal obligation to renew any of these leases. And this would simply state that it is the intent, as long as the public purpose remains there, and you periodically ratify that, is the intent to continue the program and renew leases?
Well, I think some of the fear also stems from the fact that if we were, say, everyone at the lake decided to renew at the same time, then the view is at the end of 50 years, we get this huge chunk of land turned back to us with all these improvements on it. When in reality, what's going to happen is people are going to die and it's going to pass to their children, who are then going to come to the BRA and do additional 50-year leases. People are going to sell, people are going to refinance, and through all of these purposes, leases are going to be extended for additional 50 years, whether that's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years into the term. So 50 years down the road, we're not going to have a huge chunk of land come available at the same time.
Right. So the point you made is really critical, because if you look at what we're proposing, there's not been any proposal by this board that I've heard of to alter the existing policy that if an individual comes in and they want to get a new mortgage, let's say, that they can't apply for a new lease. Certainly under the plan now, where we have a discounted structure, there's an incentive, because if you get the discounted structure, you're probably not going to want to turn that lease over unless you're selling. You're not going to want to refinance or change that lease because you get the benefit of the discount. But at some point, you may decide when the benefit of the discount wears out, or if you go in and do a refinance down the road, you'll re-up a new lease and you'll start the process over. So the 50 years is continual, just like the existing 20-year and 10-year. And we have people coming in now, and there's no greater guarantee in the existing lease than there is in this. In fact, this is giving a greater guarantee because you're giving someone 50 years firm that they're committed to, that they have the right to. But unless this board would have to change what your current policy is, and that would take an action of the board, because the way we operate right now, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but if someone comes in and they want to refinance their property, they can do that. If they want to sell the property, they can do that. And when they do that, they would get a new lease. And at the expiration today of, let's say you do your 20-year term and then you get your 10-year renewal, we're signing new leases today. And arguably, unless the board makes a change in policy, at the end of someone's 50-year term, I think you're right, it'll end up being staggered just because of what happens. That 50-year lease would be renewed unless we made a finding for the alternative, and that's that this lease then goes against our purpose of the organization.
Seems to me this conversation, the gentleman opened up by informing directly so that state policy, state law, pretty much denied any of these as soon as they sell. would be considered a sale. And we're sitting here discussing how to take a 50 and consider it like a 99, but not call it a 99. We really cannot do this. The intent was clear. The intent is that we are not authorized to dispose of our state properties. And whatever the language may be, we have to be very cautious that it's not construed by the other parties, in this particular case, in which the legislature or the attorney general or somebody who have actually intended here to dispose of property but not calling it that. I'm very concerned in the language of this thing that it reverses an intention to do something in contradiction to what the law really requires. And I'm quite cautious about being a party to that, because it can be construed as we are sitting here devising something for the convenience and the comfort of some that can take us all into the slippery slope of going down the other side of the wall.
Right now, there's nothing in the lease that does that directly. It doesn't
intimate that. As it stated here, we're okay.
Yes, sir.
But if we start adding to it, we're adding intention to avoid, and that's a concern.
Well, do you feel that the clause that Pollard discussed is in fact a renewal option?
I think if you formally put in a renewal, then I think you begin to potentially put yourself down that slippery slope. But the fact is, the continuation of the process is allowing the reletting of those properties. That's at the discretion of the board. The fact is, we have 15 new faces here, or we're 21 new faces here in 50 years, you will, and we have a new board. Part of what I think you need to remember is, from time to time, as a governmental body, what you do today may well bind the board in the future. And I think the point that Director Bailon is making is that if you get too much language entrenched in this, where it begins to look like a contractual right, then you are, to some extent, beginning to bind the board. Whereas in reality, the determination that is made by this board today, when we begin to enter into new leases, is that you think that's in the best interest of you, or what our purpose is at the Resident Board. We're doing that. 50 years, that may change, so I do think you need to be cautious about putting language in a lease that is so binding that if a board 50 years from now made a different determination, it couldn't be out.
But the specific language that Pollard offered in regards to the board reviewing the purpose at the end of the term, do you think that that's binding language?
We need to talk about this more. I mean, yes, certainly we could craft something that does not create a contractual obligation. Certainly, we can word it that way. You're perfectly right. We need to be careful if we're going to, in essence, look out into the future and say what this board is prepared to do. Number one, it cannot be contractually bound to do it. But number two, you should be able to, in essence, recognize the reality. And the reality is you have a leasing program that has continued for years and years, and at least looking out the future today, will continue. And maybe the best thing to do is not actually put a lease. Maybe it ought to be a policy in your procedures manual that would give people the comfort that this program is going to continue as long as you determine that it is part of your public purpose.
Well, the only reason why I bring this up is because there's a group out there right now that's fanning the fires of fear that in 50 years we're going to come in and confiscate everybody's homes and start leasing residential real estate, which, you know, they're so quick to point out that we have a 65-year history, and yet in 65 years we haven't done it. If we wanted to do that, we certainly wouldn't increase the lease term from 30 to 50 years. We would have kept it at 30 years so we got our hands on their homes in 30 years. So I'm trying to address that unfounded fear, and maybe if we do that for a policy, maybe that's not something we need to do from the lease. I'm very comfortable with the lease term. I think it's a benefit to everybody up at the lake. And I had a hard time understanding where some of that fear is coming from, but maybe that's something we can talk about for a policy. Thank you.
All right. If we can move on. Late fees, advance charges. I can't remember if this was in the old lease, but, you know, part of the stakeholder, the board, was that we wanted to make the lease farm more compatible with current customs and practices in leasing land. And so the idea of having a finance charge for late payment of fees certainly is consistent. Next, additional rent. These are just the, we try to address fees that you charge for additional services, docking fees, that kind of thing. And to the extent there are additional fees due that the tenant elects to ask for, then that is piled into what is called rent. Okay, next. Delivery of lease premises. This really was not addressed. I would say again, this is trying to get the lease form more up to date with the customs and practices in the market. And that is, as a landlord, you are, number one, you're leasing the property as is what it is. You're not agreeing to make any changes. It is what it is. Number two, you are disclaiming any implied representations or warranties with respect to the condition of the property. Which, if you did not state that, it would be implied that it's suitable for habitation. Basically, habitation. So, what we want to do is disclaim that. When a lessee leases a property, when they sign this renewal, they're saying, we've done our due diligence. We've looked at it. And we're satisfied it's acceptable for our purpose. Next. Can you scroll down? Access to lease premises. This is a new version we just put in last week because it's an issue that really we hadn't addressed, and that is access to these tracts that come in different forms. The one is a road connecting to whatever county roads are out there over property that is actually owned by the BRA. That's the easy one. And here we specifically grant an easement and right-of-way over those roads. The second one is that you've got roads, private roads, that lead to a county road that are actually owned by third parties, not the PRA. So it's important to disclose to the lessee that even though it looks like to be, you know, you have legal rights to use that private road, the BRA has no right unless they've already just been granted by the third party. And as I understand, that's what happens. You've got private landowners are granting right of ways of charging annual fees or something like that. So this is not a change. This is simply addressing what the reality is out there. And then the third one is that you've got some that have no access with a road and can only be accessed from the lake. So this is really just, again, a disclosure of the various ways that these tracts have access. Okay, let's go on. Article 4, a lot of this is just coming out of the existing private site. The use for residential purposes, lessee agrees to comply with all laws, including BRA's policies and procedures, and that they will not alter the land without consent of the lessor. Okay, let's move on. Most of these came right out of the private site lease and pretty much speak for themselves. These last two, historic preservation and hunting, I borrowed from the Tennessee Valley Authority lease form. They deal with the possibility that somebody finds cultural artifacts, and at that point, you want to know about it and deal with it. Okay? Indemnity. not addressed in the original lease, and very important here, and that is that the BRA, being having given occupancy and possession of this land to the lessee, needs to be indemnified from anything that happens on that property that they have control over. Because as a landlord, and a landlord with substantial assets, you are a target if there's an accident, tort claim. So we want to make sure that we shift that responsibility and that liability to the lessee and really shift it to the lessee's insurance company. Next. Impositions, utilities, maintenance. Really no change here. Any taxes, assessments on the property are paid by the lessee. As you know, the BRA is exempt anyway from ad valorem taxes. Utilities, lessee has to pay for all utilities. Water treatment and waste treatment. This is a new one, right there, that Mike and the staff asked, if in the future there is any kind of wastewater treatment system or potable water system available to the site, then the BRA has the right to require that the lessee convert over to those systems. And that would be, if by that point, if someone has made the investment in that kind of treatment plant system, it makes sense that you want to pull people off of septic tanks and wells.
The only question I have there is, can we put a specific date in there that within 12 months preceding the availability? I think it's a little vague. I don't want the leaseholders to be forced to do something immediately. I'd like to give them time to do it.
Okay.
But I'd like it specific enough that, you know, it's not a question on either party. So within 12 months of the service being made available, Right. Really, are you okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maintenance and repairs. Again, lessee has an obligation to keep the property in good condition and repairs. And you might ask, well, why do you care if I keep my house, which you don't own, in good condition? Well, you have a responsibility to make sure that this property is kept, at least from an appearance standpoint. People that are boating around the lake, you would expect your lessees to keep their houses in good condition. As with substances, not addressed in the old lease, but clearly it's important because you've got a recreational lake, you've got the public on that lake, that the lessees are very careful about any hazardous substances on the property that might pollute the lake, much less the grass. Okay? This is all part of the environmental requirements and identity of the BRA. Next, insurance. We talked about this. Again, not addressed in the cottage site lease, and that is need for lessees to have casualty property insurance on their improvements. The reason for this is not so much that the BRA cares whether there's insurance on the improvements, which they don't own, but that there's liability. And they do care about that. And I don't believe, and I've checked with a couple of insurance agents, that in fact you could, it's economically, even if it's available, get separate liability policy on residents. It's always rolled into a homeowner's policy. So that's why it's there. And the $300,000 is the minimum amount that is available under a homeowner's policy. the provisions here just are regulating that the lessor can ask that proof that the policies are in place, that they are named as an additional insurer. Okay? Assignment and sublease, I think this is a real improvement. First of all, consistent with your colleague's site lease, a lessee may not assign their lease without the consent of the lessor. But what we've done is recognize that people are making substantial improvements. They have an expectation of their children. If they were to die, their children would still have this house. And so we've specifically addressed that consent is not required, that assignment is permitted if it's by intestate succession or under will. Second, we recognize the rights of the mortgagee to foreclose, and that of and by itself would not be a cause for consent or a default under the lease. So a mortgagee has comfort in knowing if they have to foreclose, they can take a lease over. Client enjoyment, same thing, holding over. Really, the only thing we've done there is put some teeth into someone who decides that they're just going to stay there notwithstanding the lease is terminated. And it's ratcheted up to 150%. Fault and remedies. No real change there. They're basically two. Events of default are failure to pay rent and or failure to comply with any other provisions in the lease. There was a 30-day notice and cure period in each case. You can scroll on. Okay. Remedies. There are two. Terminate the lease and require the lessee to remove the improvements and return it to its original condition. And termination means there's been a default. Failure to pay rent, lessor terminates the lease. Lessee is obligated to remove the improvements. If they don't remove the improvements, the BRA has a right to remove the improvements and charge the lessee. The second one, without termination, is just dealing with kind of default that you want fixed. I mean, if they're out there doing excavation, they alter the terrain of the land, and that's causing a problem with surface water flowing and that kind of thing. And they're refusing to do anything. You've got a right to come on the property and fix it and charge them. Okay, we can scroll on. Lessee financing, we've tried to beef that up to give mortgagees comfort that this is something they can use as collateral for a loan for construction, refinance, whatever. And that is, first of all, we recognize that a lessee can use their lease as collateral for a loan. We say that the lease and the landlord's rights and the ownership of the land is not part of that mortgage. You are not. BRA is not granting a lien on the fee title estate. Nor are they subordinating their legal title to the mortgage. So what the lender gets is a lien on the leasehold estate that the lessee has. We agree that once notice is given of a mortgage, that the BRA will give notice to the mortgagee of any default and an opportunity to cure. And then finally, scroll them down. Again, if the BRA is notified that there is a mortgage, they will not modify the lease without the lender's consent. So that gives you the basic elements that a lender is going to look for. All right, damage or destruction. Basically, this is giving the lessee an option. If the house is damaged, burned down, partially damaged, they've got an option to repair it or terminate the lease. But if they terminate the lease, they've got to clean it up. By the way, I forgot actually a real important part. Go back to the first page. Okay, to the term. Under term, the lessee has a right to cancel this lease on 12 months' notice at any time. And that was not a right given to the lessees under the existing copy cycle. So that's a real benefit to someone who just decides they don't want to be there anymore. Okay, if we could go back. Let's see. Where are we? Okay, construction improvements. This really is no different than...
I've got one question about the construction. You gave them, want to give 12 months to repair or construct new improvements. Does that mean everything?
The damage clause?
Yeah, the one you were just on, 14.1.
Yes.
Is that saying that if you don't have your house built back in 12 months, that there's a problem?
That it's a default term of the lease, yes.
So you... It would be expected that the house is burned down, they have to wait on the insurance money, get an architect, new design, permit from the BRA, and have it all built within 12 months. Okay.
By the way, we did add a provision that if there's an emergency situation, if the BRA determines that because of the damage that's occurred, that repair or removal needs to be on a shorter time frame, they can require that. Public health, safety, or welfare. Okay. Improvements. This is really no different than what's in the county site lease. Requires BRA consent. They have to look at the plans. We recognize that's about the same. Okay, let's go again. This one, you might, as you're asking, this was new. The reason is there is case law that says that a tenant can hire a contractor to make improvements to the property. And if they're not paid, the contractor can file a mechanic's lien, not just on the leasehold, but on the fee title of the state of the landlord. The theory is the landlord has kind of consented to the improvements, and so they've consented to their land being subject to mechanics. So what we do here is make sure that doesn't happen. Okay. Okay, ownership of improvements. This is probably one of the bigger changes and the one that people are most interested in. What we've made clear is that the improvements are owned by the lessee. They are not owned by the BRA. Now, when the lease terminates, then what are we going to do? And keep in mind, we've talked about this several times. Before, in the hindsight lease, it wasn't addressed. And the law, common law, and which has been adopted by the Texas Supreme Court, is absent an agreement to the contrary between landlord and tenant, the improvements stay with the property. The court's way of making a determination. What do you do with these improvements if, when the lease is ended, the lessee has no more right of possession? What happens to the improvements? There's got to be certainty. So we've done that, and it's the lessee's. When the lease terminates, the lessee has an option. They can remove the improvements, or they can abandon them, not remove them and abandon them. But clearly, within that time period, 12 months, one of two things have to happen. They're either removed, and they're the lessee's, or they're deemed abandoned, and they belong to the BRA. And we've also said that BRA has the discretion of requiring improvements to be removed. They elect that these improvements are more damaging to the value of the property. They should have the right to require the lessee to remove the improvements that they put on the property to begin with. Okay, next. Lessor's land, by law, landlord has a lien on property on site to cover the payment of rent. That's no different than what existed before. It's just clearly stated. Okay, notices, just making clear where notices are to be delivered. Next. Additional rights and obligations. This is basically what we just put in one section. A lot of the provisions that are in the contract is dealing with raising the level of delay, sanitary regulations, truck regulations. So all of these are basically come out of the existing cottage site lease and incorporated into this section. Okay.
I have a question about the raising of the lake level 15 feet. Was that in the old lease? It was?
I don't really have a good handle on exactly where that came in or what drove it, but it was in those leases or it was done at first. I guess at some time historically it was considered that perhaps there may be a point in time where we want to life cycle the lake, runs its course, a new dam is constructed, or a new dam is built, or the existing dam is added to raise the waters. That's historical.
Okay. All right. We can scroll down. Sanitary water levels. This is a PERC. These are all PERC provisions that existed. Now, one thing, we added this language that's highlighted. The fact is that FERC has their own rules and regulations with respect to the use of property. And they change. They're not necessarily consistent. You can't necessarily rely on them. And FERC Council has told us time and time again that this is an issue. Now, it's not an issue as long as the FERC is asleep and they don't come out and inspect. But as we know, back in 1980, they made an inspection, they found violations, and fortunately things were worked out. It was grandfathered. But the point is that a lessee needs to know that FERC land is different than BRA land. And the BRA can only grant rights to the land it owns. So there's a disclaimer with respect to any structures or improvements that are put on the FERC property that it requires approval of the firm. Okay, next. These are just some of the general provisions that you can see in any of these. You can scroll on down. Force majeure, that's one that, of course, is a benefit to both parties. If, for whatever reason, rainstorm, whatever, you're delayed in complying with the timeline, then that timeline is extended for the period of time you were unable to comply. Dispute resolution, we put that in there, that there's been at least before people trace off to the courthouse, they'll mediate. And any judge today that would not require mediation first before you start high pleading. Waiver of jury trial, it's just section of the BRA that we want to go before a judge that can identify these issues and make a determination and not be at risk of a jury that, for whatever reason, doesn't care what the law is. This last one, prior to the existing mortgage, is dealing, again, with the lender issues when you have a mortgage on property. And this was a good point that was brought out by DK Resnick. And that is, if anyone signs a new lease, a renewal of a new lease, what is the effect on the mortgage, and what is the effect on the title insurance that both the owner's title insurance and mortgagee's title insurance. And so we did some investigation, called, number one, the title companies and mineral wells that probably closed most of the deals, the loans, and sales of these leases out there, and talked to the underwriters of the insurance company who provide the insurance to find out, what is your take on what we're doing, and how is this in any way going to have an effect on the title insurance? And just like with the FERC, the insurance commission and title insurance companies kind of make up their own rules. So we did not get an absolute answer to that, but we did get a promise of an opinion that as long as you recognize in this lease that it is a renewal of the existing cottage lease, and that is you're not terminating the leasehold estate and then creating a new one under a new lease, it's simply really you're amending it, you're modifying it, and you're continuing that right that the lessee got when they signed that cottage site lease, and that right that was insured by the title insurance company. In their opinion, there is no effect on the title insurance, owners or mortgagees. Now, one title company, insurance company, said, yeah, but that will only last for the original term, because that's the term we insured, not the extended term. And then another insurer said, really, it doesn't matter. I mean, you can just perpetually renew it, and that title insurance on that lease will stay as long as it's alive, continues. But in almost all instances, any modification of a lease that is collateral for a loan requires lender consent. And so what we've done is put a kind of a note. Before you sign this, if you've got a mortgage, go take it to your lender and make sure that and get their consent. Okay. I think we can go now on to Schedule B.
From a clarification perspective, the staff was kind of scratching our head on one thing. I want to just make sure we're all on the same page because it was a point of discussion with regard to the rights and obligations on casualty. Tina, can you pull that up, please? Article 14. Paul, I think what our thought was on that, and I want to see if you remember it the same way. Our position, I think, from the BRA was that we're not as concerned about mandating that the lessee rebuild the house. If the house burns down, the lessee really ought to have a couple options. One is they can certainly take their insurance proceeds or whatever and rebuild. In the alternative, if they opt not to rebuild, if they're going to restore the surface estate to a presentable condition where there's no, you know, anything unreasonably dangerous, burned out structure, that sort of thing, then we would not mandate that the lease be terminated. They could continue to use that surface estate, okay, point one. And in that regard, once they take down whatever is unreasonably dangerous, now our goal there is we don't want to, like, for example, a huge burned out structure that people could get injured on. We have had instances in the past where we have been sued where individuals have been injured on leasehold property. So if they remediate the problem, i.e. the burned out hulk, and it takes them 3 years to get an architect designed to figure out, you know, what they want to build or where they want to go with the property, I don't think we have any objection to that. So the confusion was in Iowa, it says, cause such damage to repair or restore or construct new improvements on that old construct, right.
Or remove the damage.
Right. We just need to make it clear that as long as they remove the damage, As long as they remove the damage, they don't have to immediately rebuild. I mean, if our interest is not in the improvements, it's just in ensuring that the real property doesn't create an unreasonable hazard. And I think that's, from a staff perspective, what we thought. And we just need to probably clarify that language.
Okay. Good. All right.
Before we go on to some of the exhibits, is there anybody on the committee or on the board present that has questions? I'd be interested to...
I've got one quick question. Under the assignment and subletting, Article 9.
Article 9, you said?
9.3. But just explain that a little bit to me, would you please?
Well, first of all, the lessor has an absolute right to sell, assign, do whatever they want with these, period. So we are stating only what the law is anyway. And it was more to make sure clarification of that. If the landlord wants to package up these leases and use them as collateral for some financing, bond issue, to raise money to put improvements into PK, like paved roads and that kind of thing, that they could do that. But it also, if they wanted to, I know that part of the Staubach recommendation was one way to raise revenue would be to, in essence, package up leases and sell them to someone who's interested in the revenue stream. Those are probably the two instances where that would come in play.
Okay.
Back here at Article 4, permitted uses. The last sentence says, leasing may not forbid the public from using the project. Does that mean if the public can come across my property that I'm leasing at will to get to the
water property?
Yeah. Yeah. 4-1.
That's an
issue. It's true emergency, I don't understand that, but...
Her counsel told us that the public has a right of passage over her property. Right of passage, and then you have to you come on, and then you have to go off. So, of course, they cannot say drive the boat up and sit there and have a picnic. They cannot drive the boat up and then go on to the foot property and then walk over onto your property to get to the convenience store. Can't do that. But if they have an emergency with their boat, they've got to ride the top there and deal with that. If someone wants to walk around the lake on the shoreline, they can do that. You cannot fence off the first property at the shoreline that prevents passage along the shoreline.
Same rules of beaches and architecture.
Right.
Well, that's the same with the Corps of Engineers. Yeah. You know, below the, there's a certain level above conservation the Corps of Engineers owns, and I know that we had people, unlike the BRA, that would actually show up with lawn chairs and coolers and sit in our backyard and fish all afternoon. And there was absolutely nothing we could do about it.
But
so
it's common old law called the Seaman's Right of Way. So it's common law.
But this is statutory. I mean, and it's more than that. I mean, this FERC rules and regulations allow public access. Yeah, yes. Okay.
Anything else?
Okay. Let's go to this. Okay, this is the internship. Right now, if you, the existing lease, you guys can adjust rent every 5 years. And it's basically whatever the policy is at the time for leasing. And it's basically what this says, what it goes goes on to say is basically what the methodology is going to be. It's not going to be the BLRA crystal ball on what they think rents are today, just going to make the policy. It's tied to the essence of the index, and that is the county tax assessor's valuation of the property. These are just definitions. Minimum rent, the rent cannot fall below a set amount, which is in here. We'll see the schedule. The percentage is a fixed percentage that changes every 5 years, and it starts at about 2% or 4%, depending on the schedule, and ratchets up every 5 years until you get 6%. 6% is the magic number. It's the return on the asset that tells you you're getting somewhat close to a market return on your asset. Now, the board is elected to adopt county tax assessor's appraisal of the property rather than actual appraisals. So whether you're at market or not is left to the county tax assessor to determine. Rent adjustment dates every 5 years, and then we have the rent schedules. Let's scroll down. Annual rent, this just explains what happens every 5 years. We added a second paragraph. Right now, the tax assessor taxes the leasehold estate, which is all they can tax. They can't tax your fee title. And you've got land and you've got improvements. And they determine what the value of those improvements are, you know, and they'll look at usual appraisal methodologies like replacement value and what the market is, what they're selling for, that kind of thing. And then they appraise the land, the leasehold estate in the land, huh? And up to now, they basically assessed the value of the land based on what they believe the market value of the land is, not the market value of the leasehold estate. And theoretically, if they were to come back and say, you know, that's not right. The value of the land under this lease is going down in value because every year your right of possession is decreasing. But obviously, from the BRA standpoint, the value of that land is not decreasing. If anything, it's going up, and thus the disparity that has occurred in what you guys are getting for rent today versus what these properties are selling for, including the value of the land. So what we said is, if for whatever reason the county tax assessor elects not to continue the methodology of value of land, then the BRA has an option to come up with some other reasonable means of valuing the land for purposes of determining land.
Can we put something in there that says basically that if the lessor determines to take this approach, that it will immediately notify the lessees? Yeah, I understand that notice would be given. Mm-hmm. But I'd like it to be in there that we will immediately do it and we'll lay out the grounds for our approach or our methodology or something. Well, did you see where I'm going with that? Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
I just don't want them to, you know, want you to get a bill from us instead and go, wait a minute, what's up?
Our tax assessor in Bell County, her decision was, oh, we all got a notice only when our value had changed. You know, the rest of them were okay, but a lot of them were frozen because they were old people. But this one, we were notifying them immediately by mail or something when their value had been changed for whatever reason. Notify them immediately, give them time.
Well, I think just before it's changed, but when we opt to elect that option, we notify them that we will be assessing it from this point forward.
I know.
Okay.
Let's go to the schedules. And these are very specific. The Okay. You've got two schedules depending on when you opt in. There's an incentive, obviously, to sign up early and get the lower percentage. But it's very specific when the adjustment occurs, what the percentage is, and what the minimum amount of rent will be. So the only variable is a change in the tax assessor's valuation. And that is consistent with what you've already adopted. So that's my presentation. Okay, thanks.
Phil, in regards to provided we pass some sort of resolution that this goes to the full board on the 31st, I'd like a reasonable amount of time be given for review to the general public. If we've got 3 weeks between now and that meeting, can we split the difference and make it the 18th? The comments have to be back in by the 18th.
The 18th is a Tuesday, or we can make it the 19th, which is Wednesday, which gives them another day. And
well, let's do the 19th. That's fine. That's right in the middle. So can we get this on our website today?
Yes.
Okay. Is everybody on the committee okay with that?
Sure.
You know, we're all aware that there was an article given to the Lake Country Sun that the lease is... Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to ask a question for the gentleman who placed that letter to the editor here today.
One of them's here. and I'll chime in on my personal opinion. I mean, they were very clear in their letter that said the lease was available on the 15th. I have a copy of a memo one of the authors of that letter that specifically talks about their legal team, and it consists of Robert Aldrich, Craig Fitzgerald, Robert McCullough, Paul Pullum, and Jim Shields, and Jay Turner. And I would fully expect those gentlemen to chime in and make their comments in the next 10 days on this lease. It's offensive to me that they are critical in the paper, but yet they have not taken the opportunity when we have had people in the public, Roger Galt, I believe it was Matt Pearson, and some others that have taken the time to review that lease and have contributed to the document that we have here today. So I think that's enough time. I mean, we had 2 months for the shoreline management. We only had, I think, 3% response from the general public. So this is an important document. It's critical. And we can all sit down and review it in a reasonable amount of time. I expect the general public to do that. I don't think that's asking too much. So is there a resolution? Is this the appropriate time?
I think you may need to make, based on the discussion here, it's apparent to me that there's a couple changes to the lease form. You know, if you'll notice in the resolution, it says, here's all the board directors of respiratory five jobs to do. Respiratory Costa Lake residential ground lease form presented to the Costa Committee on this day. In fact, we know based on the discussions today that there's some minor modifications that need to be done. So I think we need to do that with modifications as deemed appropriate. I mean, basically what we want, what I suspect is, you want to pass a resolution to the board that says, we've looked at this lease and we're comfortable with it subject to the fact that there's been some changes.
Okay.
That's the process. What I hear you saying is, your goal is to open up the door for folks that want to come in and make certain comments or whatever. We can get those in writing, and then it may well be that based on those comments, we will modify the lease.
Correct.
And about the time to consider, I didn't receive the latest copy of the draft, so I had no time to consider what was put before us today.
Okay.
So that's just probably a little housekeeping. Okay.
And we all probably need to realize that given the time to the public and given the time for the staff to incorporate any changes, we may not get the final version 5 days before the board meeting, which is typical for our information. So we all need to be comfortable with that. Do you need would this be a good time to take a 10-minute break and allow you the opportunity to change the resolution?
Arguably, let me just say this. We can formally pass a resolution, or in fact, we can just post the item for discussion. You know, we can put it back on for action by the board, because in reality, we don't have a form to issue to approve it as finalized anymore.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is, if you, let's say you didn't pass a specific resolution, the fact of the matter is you've discussed your suggestion of what I think you want to happen is you want staff to go back, provide the comments put on the website where the public can see and incorporate those changes. So arguably, if you didn't take any action, it really wouldn't change the ultimate outcome. We would just post the direction on the board, and we can discuss the changes at that time, and the board could approve it. There wouldn't be a formal list. There would not be a formal resolution by committee, but frankly, there doesn't have to be.
Okay. Well, then I'm fine with that. Well, then, a 10-minute break before we move into our next item of discussion.
Yes, sir.